Advocacy Committee. I call this meeting to order. For everyone who is here today, I ask you to mute your mics. With that, I just wanted to let you know that this meeting can be viewed online at the House webcast. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. I would like to ask the committee legislative assistants to now take the role. Mr. Chavez.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor, present. Vice Chair Jaejong.
Present.
Vice Chair Jaejong, present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton, present. Baker. Baker. Daphne. Daphne. Frankie. Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Frankie, present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman, present. Haley. Haley. Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Cagle. Cagle. Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun, present. Olson.
Present.
Olson, present. Tujong.
Present.
Tujong, present. Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Baker, present as well.
Oh, sorry. I need to go back to the list, actually. Baker, present. Daphne. Daphne. Haley. Haley. Cagle. Cagle. Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
There's a quorum present. Thank you, Mr. Chavez. Members will now entertain a motion to approve the minutes for March 24. Lead Hamilton, do you want to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Lead Hamilton moves the approval for the minutes of March 24, 2021. Any discussions? Any discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. Members, welcome back. As you can hear the Wednesday siren behind me, it's just the normal siren that we usually get at the beginning of the month to make sure that our systems are working. So I'm glad that we can hear it everywhere across the city. So members, today we will be covering the omnibus bill. We have House File 1342. So I just wanted first to begin by thanking all our staff, especially the nonpartisan staff, who have put a lot of efforts to make sure that we do have a bill before us. They have done a significant work to get us to where we are today. And although we had a lot of good bills, good suggestions, good input, with the limited resources, with the limited time, we were unable to bring all those bills in one place and to include them. However, our conversation still continues. So I would like to move House File 1342. This will be only for discussion. It will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And we do have many public members who are with us today. And I would like to start with an opening statement. The COVID-19 pandemic and the corresponding economic crisis have undermined the health and economic well-being of Minnesota workers and also businesses. And more than a million Minnesota workers have received at least one payment of an unemployment benefit in the wake of COVID-19, with many still out of work for more than a year, even longer, and many businesses shut down due to the pandemic. Our Workforce and Business Development Bill establishes a framework designed to inform our state's economic stabilization, economic security, and long-term recovery. It's focused on three core pillars: strengthening Minnesotan small business competitiveness, strengthening workforce development, and improving workplace benefits. These strategic pillars guide our legislative priorities. It provides grant for small businesses that demonstrate a need for financial relief based on lost revenues related to the disruption of business operation caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Long-term investment in small businesses and workforce development, childcare business development in underserved areas, and workplace benefits such as paid family and medical leave will help workers meet their personal and family health care needs while also fulfilling work responsibilities. By focusing on these priorities, our state will be better in aligned workforce development with employer needs and support an innovative business environment to help businesses grow and thrive. Our transformative workforce development priorities for high skill, high wage, and in-demand jobs that support family sustaining wages, particularly for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and also women who are facing unprecedented high rate of unemployment. Eliminating employment barriers and innovation is our goal. The data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics last week is clear. We have got more work to do. With that, members, I believe we can and will emerge stronger and will move forward to the vision that we all share to build thriving, equitable, and prosperous economy. With our first testifier on this bill, Commissioner Steve Grove, welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I don't think the commissioner has joined yet.
Chair, I just texted the commissioner. Sorry, this is Darielle. He's also juggling a vaccine awareness event today with food manufacturing workers, so he should be on in just a second.
All right, Chair. Did we want to go through a walkthrough with nonpartisan staff before we did testifiers, or?
No, I wanted to give the commissioner, but because he's not in, so I will start with the nonpartisan overview. I know the commissioner had a commitment. That's why I started with him.
He's here. Before.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Unless he wants to wait for the nonpartisan to do the overview. Commissioner Grove, I'm assuming you can wait for a few minutes for the overview from the nonpartisan staff.
Hello, sir. Yes, that sounds good.
All right, well, thank you. I was a little bit worried because of your schedule conflict. So with that, I wanted to ask the nonpartisan staff, starting with Ms. Solvay. Please, Ms. Bickle, go ahead and give us a background on the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair and members, I am just going to share my spreadsheet with you. There is a version of my spreadsheet available on the committee website, but the one I'm going to be sharing with you today is just a little bit more simplistic, just for the camera's sake. Okay, I'm sharing it now. All right, so my spreadsheet here just shows the House position. If you would like the fiscal years 18-19, fiscal years 2021, and the governor's position, you can also go online and look at that website, look at that spreadsheet. But for now, I will focus on the House. So there are two normal accounts that go along with the Workforce Committee, and that is the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Destination Medical Center. Technically, the Destination Medical Center is administered by DEED as well, but I like to separate it out because it is statutory general fund spending. In addition, there are appropriations in this bill to the Department of Labor and Industry, Minnesota Management and Budget, the Legislature, and the Supreme Court from the general fund. Then I show the revenue below. So these are just items that have generated revenue in some way. Here is the paid family and medical leave transfer into the general fund. I will explain more of this later. Here is contingent revenue. If the Northeast Entrepreneur Fund returns this money, the state will then appropriate the same amount of money for additional uses. Here is the MIF one-time extension. Essentially, if cities return a certain portion of their unused Minnesota Investment Fund funds, then they are allowed to use a certain percent for any lawful purpose. And finally, the governor has small business COVID support loan repayments. You will note here that there is nothing here. The House position went with grants instead of loans. And so where the governor has loan repayment in fiscal years 22 through 25, the House does not see that loan repayment and therefore does not generate revenue from that. So then you can take a look at the entire general fund impact from this bill here. And here you can see the targets. In fiscal year 21, $25 million is canceled. That's why we have this distance of $25 million. And you can see the bill spends it in fiscal years 22, 23. I've also included here in the summary the Workforce Development Fund impact. So you can take a look at that impact to the Workforce Development Fund, and I'll explain that more later as well. Looking at the detail, first we go to DEED's Business and Community Development Division. If you focus on these light blue lines here, if there is a number in these lines, it means that something has changed from the February forecast. So that will indicate to you, oh, here's something new. So for example, we've got the Governor's Small Business and Development Center Regional Appropriation, the Small Business Support Package, appropriation, the House and Governor's local community child care position. The governor appropriated $750,000 to this in fiscal year 22, and the House has a $10 million appropriation of fiscal year 2022, and then additional child care appropriations to the Minnesota Initiative Foundations at $2 million in fiscal year 2022. Then you'll note the Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund are having a 1 year, so it's not in the tails, a 1 year reduction in funding in order, the agency does not believe that they will use the funds this year due to COVID issues. So that is the justification for that reduction in this biennium. Then you can see here that there is an extension of the appropriations to the Duluth Paper Mill and the Rosemount Water Pipe appropriation. So these would have otherwise canceled at the end of the current fiscal year, but instead they are extended. And this has no general fund impact because this is just a carve out from the Minnesota Investment Fund. Okay, again, moving down to just the change items here. Here's the governor's job and automation training grant appropriation at $250 each year. Then Launch Minnesota is continued for another biennium. Here is the House position micro enterprise development appropriation in at $1.05 million per year. And then the House Community Business Development Grants coming in at $5.298 million and $5.297 million for a total of $10.6 million in the biennium. Here we see that Northeast Entrepreneur Fund appropriation, pending that contingent return of funds, this will be appropriated. And then finally, the House Small Business COVID Support Grants. I will show you the loans laid out by the governor shortly, but this is in a different position just to simply show that this is a normal appropriation for grants and not loans. All right, here there's effectively no change. I apologize. Here is where the transfer out to for the governor's small business support loan program would be. Of course, you can see the details for this on the full spreadsheet that is available online. Then we just have regular standard appropriations, no change on this page. And then we come down to workforce development. Here the governor had a proposal to eliminate the Higher Ed Career Advising Program. And so you can see that there are no appropriations. And so it's a negative 500 cost for the biennium. And here also are the governor and House proposals for the Propel nonprofits at $1 million a year for $2 million in the biennium. And then a House appropriation to the Minnesota Technical Association for $875 each year for $1.75 million over the biennium. Here we see the Workforce Development Fund direct appropriations. Above, you may have noticed that there were no additional Workforce Development Fund appropriations here. It was just these. And here, there are less than years past. This, for example, is fiscal year 21. And so this reflects the House proposal to rework how the Workforce Development Fund works and to put more, I'll rephrase this. The House has engaged in a reworking of the Workforce Development Fund and how those funds are appropriated or distributed. And Ms. Shaleen will explain that further. But you can regardless see that there are less appropriations in this and the following biennium than before. Okay, in general support services, there is a governor's proposal to have a labor market research study on real-time pandemic recovery that is just for the current biennium. It's not in the second. And then an operating adjustment. For the Minnesota Trade Office, the governor has suggested getting rid of STEP grants, again, just for the current biennium, largely because of COVID. And finally, the Governor Trade Policy Advisory Council, the governor recommended getting rid of that program, and so you can see savings of $100,000 per biennium. Vocational Rehabilitation Services has no change. State Services for the Blind also has no change. Here is the administrative holdback from fiscal year 21. The governor canceled it. The House also proposes canceling it. And then here is the unemployment insurance contingent appropriation that was created in the 2020 special session 7 language. And so the House just cancels these funds back to the general fund to get that $25 million in savings. Neither Deed nor MMB were able to use this given the language associated with it, and therefore the House decided to cancel it in fiscal year 21. Here I have a rough estimate of the impact of the unemployment insurance updates. This is an ever-changing number, but My colleague, Ms. Shaleen, will go further into the changes to the unemployment insurance policy. And then I have the governor's paid family and medical leave position. The House has a very similar proposal. The only general fund spending out of, or for this program, indeed, is the $10.8 million in fiscal year 2022. Then there are other general fund appropriations for other agencies like DLI. Here we have 528. But mostly this program is funded via the premiums or assessments for the paid family and medical leave program, which then go into the a special account for the paid family and medical leave program. So here you can see that program paying back the general fund for costs, and this is for costs associated with all the agency's general fund costs. And here you can see the revenues that are generated by the premiums, and the benefits paid are estimated here. Stuck in the middle here is the Destination Medical Center. These are all just statutory appropriations that MMB determines based on a formula. And then we're back down to the paid family and medical leave provision with just items for different agencies. So operating costs for the Department of Labor and Industry out of general fund and paid family and medical leave, appropriations for the Department of Human Services out of the paid family and medical leave fund, appropriations for MMB out of the general fund. Notably, this amount is the ongoing general fund cost for employer paid premium costs for the state employees, paid family and medical leave appropriation, legislative appropriation one time, Supreme Court appropriation one time, and then the Court of Appeals has estimated that they will have costs starting in fiscal year 2025. Those are my comments, and I'm happy to stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bickle. I appreciate you walking us through the spreadsheet and all the hard work on that. Ms. Charlene, if you can walk us through some of the policy and all the changes that are included in the Omnibus DE bill.
Chair and members, Ms. Bickle has already covered the appropriations made in Articles 1 and 2 of the bill. So I will move on to the policy provisions contained in Articles 3, 4, 5, and 6. I'm going to keep this very high level, but I am available, as is Ms. James, if you have further questions. So beginning on page 41 of the bill, Article 3, Section 1, this is a governor's proposal. In fact, almost all of the language in Article 3 comes from governor's bill proposals. And in Section 1, it allows donations to state services for the blind. Section 2 on the same page, this creates the Microenterprise Development Program, which funds development of very small businesses and targets disadvantaged entrepreneurs. This is similar to a proposal from the chair. Sections 3 and 4, these are both extensions to business subsidy compliance requirements under programs like Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund during a state of emergency. There are some technical changes that need to be made to these by amendment. Now, throughout the bill, one of the major proposals is a realignment of the Workforce Development Fund. You can find this language in Article 3, Sections 5, 9, 12 through 16, and 35. The major elements of this are that all the money in the Workforce Development Fund that has traditionally been done by direct appropriations by the legislature, instead we have a new structure that would send 5% of the money in the fund to the Job Skills Partnership Board for the existing partnership and pathways programs, 65% of the money in the fund for existing competitive grant programs, plus two new programs, the Removing Barriers to Employment Program and Innovative Employment Solutions. These are similar to to what has been done through direct appropriations in the past. The Innovative Employment Solutions has a focus more on new groups and programs and is done through pay for performance. And the Removing Barriers to Employment is geared towards more the organizations that have normally gotten repeating appropriations. In addition, the remaining 30% of money in the fund goes to the Dislocated Worker Program. And then every March 1st, they look and see if there's excess money in the fund based on some standards. And then 50 to 70% of that excess would also go to the Removing Barriers and Innovative Employment Solutions programs. It also creates a Grant Review Advisory Council of 15 experts to advise the commissioner on making grants under these programs. And it eliminates a couple existing training programs, the low-income worker and special incumbent worker programs. Again, these were all suggested by the governor with some modifications done by the chair. In sections 6 through 8 of the bill, the Job Skills Partnership Board, they add one more director to the board, someone who has an expertise in workforce training. In sections 10 and 11, makes modifications to the Dislocated Worker Program, mostly to allow participation if job loss is temporary and some other things to adjust to the pandemic. In sections 17 through 27 of the bill, again, a governor's provision, makes changes to the Job Training Incentive Program. It broadens it to include both new and maintained jobs and adds an automation incentive to reimburse employers for training workers on new automation technology. In sections 28 through 30 of the bill in Article 3 still makes a variety of changes to the uniform outcome report cards. Again, all governor's suggestions. Section 31 codifies the Pathways to Prosperity program that has existed for a number of years but was never in statute previously. Section 32 modifies the Launch Minnesota program. Section 33 raises the grant limit for MIF and JCF to $2 million temporarily. And Section 34 is the local government loan repayment fund use that Ms. Beckel already covered. In Article 4, all 38 sections of Article 4 are to do with paid family leave, as is Article 5. These are all based on House File 1200. Article 6, sections 1 through 12 are based on House File 1034 and make a variety of changes to the UI laws. Again, Ms. James is available if a more detailed overview is needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the analysis and helping us getting through this, Ms. Charlene. So with that, I wanted to invite Commissioner Grove. I know he has got a head start, so I wanted to make sure that I give him the opportunity to have his input. Commissioner, welcome, and please proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Grove, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And it's an honor to have the chance today here to reflect on the extraordinary package that you've just put forward. Crafting a bill of this size and of this complexity, of this importance, is a huge endeavor. And I just want to express my gratitude to you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for a really thoughtful approach here in putting together a package that's going to help Minnesota's economy rebound from this pandemic by focusing on those who've been most affected by the damage of COVID-19. You know, there are a lot of components of this bill where we share a lot of alignment. You heard that as we heard several of the elements outlined in the package we just heard. When the governor and lieutenant governor have looked at this legislative session, and in particular on Deed's recommendations for this budget, the three main themes that we have focused on really are immediate rescue assistance to those most affected by the pandemic, a focus on small businesses and startups, which are going to generate all of the net new jobs that we see coming on board in the coming months ahead as we recover, and on making sure that we strengthen our workforce and put Minnesota really on the leading edge of talent development across our state so that we can make this a state that works for everyone and get those jobs back that we lost during the pandemic and write the next chapter of our economy. Lots in this package that does that. We are grateful to see the $50 million package for emergency COVID-19 support. Grateful to see the Small Business Development Center supports to help those critical centers across our state advise and consult businesses across Minnesota. We're thrilled to see specific investments for BIPOC-led businesses through millions of dollars in funding towards institutions that help small businesses led by immigrant entrepreneurs and other BIPOC startup founders start those businesses, get the technical assistance they need to succeed, and the loan capital they need to get started. And we're thrilled also to see Launch Minnesota in this list of priorities from this committee. Launch Minnesota is a critical program in putting Minnesota's startup ecosystem on the map at a time when you've really got to make sure you're leaning forward to help create the next big companies in a time of disruption. That's what recessions give us an opportunity to do. And the growth we've seen in our startup community based on this program and the partners we have in it is critical. And continuing to invest there is essential for the growth of our state. There's a lot to like in here for job programs that help assist companies who are trying to automate, which is a major trend in our economy today, one in which we need to ensure we're training workers to up-level their skills to be able to do those jobs alongside new tools and machinery. And, you know, I think that the policy changes to the Workforce Development Fund, which we just heard more about, are truly critical. This is our shot at systemic change in Minnesota, to be clear. We have a Workforce Development Fund that is an extraordinary advantage that really only our state has that is generated through that payroll tax from employers, but hasn't really been updated in the last 30 years. We've got a shot, after all we've been through this last year, to remake this system in a way that works for our modern economy, emphasizing performance, emphasizing equity, emphasizing transparency, and really putting our funding where the growth is going to be. And this bill does just that. And I want to, in particular, thank the chair for his creativity and thoughtfulness on developing a grant review advisory committee to make sure that it's members of the community themselves who help make decisions on the grants that DEED delivers. So, you know, again, as you walk through that spreadsheet and see the lack of direct appropriations there, that is simply because we have that much more money, in fact, far more, to grant to many of those same organizations and others who've proven their effectiveness serving communities of color and others across the state who need help in workforce development through effective grant-making programs. We've gotten a lot of feedback from this committee on ways to craft that just right. 50% of that money going to the metro, 50% to Greater Minnesota, and a lot of good work ahead. And then lastly, on unemployment insurance, a program we've seen stretched to the limits this last year. Very appreciative that the House included our two UI priorities in there. Number one, additional opportunities to retrain through our reemployment training program that include ESL and GED classes, something we think is critical to help make sure that when folks who are on unemployment insurance get back into the market, they're getting jobs at a higher level than when they left, which creates more prosperity for all. And secondly, a critical issue, which is to make sure that young people have access to unemployment insurance throughout. Right now, they have it through special federal benefits, but that will expire this September. And if we don't pass this law, we'll see thousands of young people across Minnesota lose those benefits. And just to put it into perspective, the cost of that particular program is, we estimate, in the range of $20 to $30 million a year. When you compare that to the trust fund debt that we currently have of $1.3 billion, that's 0.01% added on top of our obligation. So it's next to nothing, but it's next to everything for the young people who will receive these benefits if we can pass that package. So really grateful for that as well. Again, we think that a bold vision is needed right now from this committee and from our state's leaders to ensure that our economic recovery is equitable, that it's fair, that it's driven by performance, that it makes the right investments at the right time to really differentiate Minnesota coming out of this pandemic. And we believe that this bill does just that. So thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee for allowing me to share my thoughts here. I've got members of my team here in the committee hearing for further questions as we go forward, and looking forward to working with you in the weeks that lie ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. I know other deputy commissioners and staff are also available in case of any questions. I wanted to now ask Commissioner Robertson to introduce herself and proceed with her testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Rosalyn Robertson, and I am the commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm very pleased to speak in support of the paid family medical leave provision in the Workforce and Business Development Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. A comprehensive paid family and medical leave program will provide Minnesotans economic stability and needed time away from work to welcome a new family member, to care for themselves, care for their dependent children, or an aging loved one, or recover from an injury or illness. Current unpaid leave laws, which provide a right for certain employees to take job protected leave, depending on the size of the employer and how long they've been employed, are woefully inadequate, as many workers simply can't afford to take an extended unpaid time off of work to care for caring responsibilities. Paid family and medical leave would ease the financial burden on families during significant life events. Paid family and medical leave would benefit hardworking Minnesotans. In addition to partial wage replacement, the legislation includes important job protections to ensure workers can return to employment after a leave and can't be retaliated against for requesting or obtaining such benefits. Paid family and medical leave would also benefit employers, increasing workforce attachment and employee morale. Low-wage workers and Minnesotans of colors are least likely to receive paid time off from work. For many Minnesotans, taking leave with little or no pay can create significant economic stability for their family, often during the most challenging times. Paid family and medical leave is therefore a matter of equity, an important opportunity to address persistent disparities. I appreciate that the bill provides $1.046 million in fiscal year 2022 and 23, and $1.086 million in fiscal year 24-25 for the Department of Labor to fund oversight and compliance costs related to the program, as well as IT systems upgrades. Minnesotans should be able to work and still take care of their families. Paid family and medical leave is the right thing to do, and I'm very proud to offer my support. Thank you for the time to testify today, and I am available for your questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, for your testimony. I think we shall take the remaining testimony from individuals. If you can stay around, we'll appreciate that. The next person I have is Charlie Ed. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Charlie Vanderardi for Metro Cities, which represents the collective interests of cities across the metropolitan region at the legislature, executive branch, and Metropolitan Council. We thank the committee for your work this year discussing the needs of local economies and for taking time to hear from cities about the importance of the state as a partner to help support local growth efforts. Today, we appreciate the opportunity to provide comments on the omnibus bill. As we shared with you during discussion on Senator Cagle's jobs bill, Metro Cities supports state funds to help address local redevelopment and economic development needs. Cities often use their own dollars to spur jobs and investments, and cities also work with the state through three key programs. The Minnesota Investment Fund and Job Creation Fund are primary state tools. The flexibility for additional time to meet wage and job creation goals is appreciated during the pandemic. For many cities in the metropolitan region, redevelopment is their economic development, and the creation of jobs is threefold. This includes construction and demolition jobs, the jobs that come with the changes made to the property uses, and the ongoing permanent jobs. While redevelopment has recently been funded via internal D transfers from the Minnesota Investment Fund, the MIF funding at this bill is not at a level that would provide that flexibility. Metro Cities encourages the committee to consider appropriating direct funding for the state redevelopment grant program, support local efforts as the bill moves forward. We also thank the committee for its focus on employment training and workforce development. The Job Skills Partnership and other programs in the bill help train and retrain workers to have the skills that match available jobs. Other funds in the bill support adding to the construction and building workforce, which are in demand. Mr. Chair, the committee's commitment to businesses struggling during the pandemic through grants will allow businesses to survive and local economies to recover more quickly. Metro Cities appreciates the committee's focus on growing strong local economies and looks forward to working with you as the bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next person is Ms. Johnson. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Noor, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Johnson. I'm with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers and here today on behalf of our CDFI and Economic Development members and partners. I'd like to thank you for including the governor's request for small business support at $6 million in your bill. Part of this funding is expected to support technical assistance work. However, because of a delay in getting House File 2302 back from the revisor's office, we weren't able to get a hearing to advocate for a greater increase for technical assistance funded through the Business Development Competitive Grant Program. This program has not seen a funding increase since it was created in 2011. I'd like to take a moment to talk about why technical assistance is so important to help facilitate a robust recovery. During this past year, Minnesota has relied on CDFIs and nonprofit economic development organizations to both distribute hundreds of millions in financial assistance to small businesses, while skilled advisors also work with business owners to help them adapt and survive the economic impacts of the pandemic. DEED does not do this type of work, so it relies heavily on this network of community-based organizations to work directly with small business owners across our entire state. These organizations are proud to do this work and glad that they were around and available with this infrastructure in place prior to the pandemic. But as CDFIs, CDCs, and other nonprofit economic development organizations are being asked to take on increasing responsibilities, funding to support that work isn't growing. All of these organizations do such great work, and it is their collective efforts to support and grow small businesses that will ultimately strengthen our state's small business economy for decades to come. Additionally, the recession coupled with the civil unrest of 2020 hit Black, Indigenous, and people of color owned businesses particularly hard, and an equitable recovery requires us all to prioritize funding for those hardest hit. Organizations like the Latino Economic Development Center, African Development Center, MEDA, and Women Venture are helping business owners and want to do more, but without increased support, organizations face serious strain. As Minnesotans, we are striving to emerge from the events of this past year stronger than we entered it. This requires a monumental effort from all of us, working together. As your work continues with the Senate, we are asking that you please consider a funding increase for technical assistance through the Business Development Competitive Grant Program. Before I close, I'd also like to thank Representative Touchon for carrying the bill and Chair Noor for all you're doing to support rebuilding recovery efforts as well, something we are also actively supporting. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. The next person is Ms. Sigma. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Becky Sequire. I'm the director of the SciTech Internship Program at the Minnesota Technology Association. I'm here to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee, especially bill authors Representative Katiza Watun and Representative Tu Zhang, for including the SciTech Internship Program in the omnibus bill. For your reference, SciTech is in Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 12. SciTech is an important investment for Minnesota because it connects our state's critical future talent pipeline, college students and STEM majors, with paid internships in small Minnesota businesses across the state. By connecting students to hands-on experience in their fields of study and introducing them to the breadth of opportunities to build a career in Minnesota, SciTech has been able to retain 80% of interns in the program in the state after graduation. We are proud of the success of the SciTech program in creating opportunities for students underserved in STEM fields, namely women and students of color, and look forward to building on this success over the next 2 years. The SciTech program is a great example of a successful public-private partnership. SciTech provides employers with a wage match that covers 50% of the intern's wages up to $2,500. It leverages private sector funds with employers investing $1.75 on top of every dollar provided by the state. Thanks again for your time and investment in SciTech. We look forward to continuing to serve STEM students and small Minnesota businesses through the next biennium.
Thank you so much. The next person is Mr. Donaldson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to address this committee once again. My name is Brian Donaldson, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. On behalf of the 57 Boys and Girls Clubs and 53,000 youth that we serve, we are disappointed in not being included in this committee's omnibus budget. We understand the committee's direction in moving away from direct appropriations to a competitive grant process. However, we want to make sure that any new process for youth workforce funding has significantly greater investment and creates flexibility for statewide organizations, because some organizations like ours serve kids both in the metro and in greater Minnesota. We're also concerned that an entirely new process would potentially delay getting critical dollars out this summer.
Mr. Donaldson, I didn't want to disrupt you, but your voice is getting a little bit echoey, so if you can check. You can proceed.
Okay, I'll try and talk a little quieter in my brick wall office here. Boys and girls.
Or you can turn off the volume of for listening through your speak and then continue.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Boys and Girls Club serve teens in 35 communities, three Indigenous nations across the state. Most of these teens are BIPOC youth and are dealing with long-term opportunity and equities. I know many of you heard the story of Lamont Billity when we were before the committee earlier this year. His story is just one of thousands of stories that kids, club kids across the state have. Funding for these programs would provide more than 5,000 teams with curriculum around career exploration, career readiness, money management, soft skills, college prep, and assistance securing jobs and internships. Without funding for Boys and Girls Clubs Youth Workforce Program, many kids would need opportunities. The most will not be able to participate in preparation programs to enter the municipal workforce. Funding for Youth Workforce Program is essential to the longevity and success of Minnesota's youth, our business community, and our overall economy. Youth programming to prepare our kids to be successful in their careers reduces the need for larger investments in adult retraining, employment search, and safety net programs. We know that high poverty levels and academic achievement gaps existed in Minnesota long before COVID pandemic and have grown exponentially in the last 12 months. The COVID-19 pandemic, layered with this horrific death of George Floyd, and the resounding call for justice and an examination of how systematic racism has and continues to affect people of color in our communities, has magnified these inequities. We are hopeful that this committee and the administration will recognize the critical importance coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic of investing significant dollars in youth workforce development funding that would not only benefit the kids we serve across the state, but many other organizations as well. This funding will ensure that we won't miss another opportunity to provide opportunities for kids who may not otherwise have the chance to get a head start on their success. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much. The next person is Mr. Marquardt. Welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott Marquardt, and I'm here today representing the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, or EDAM, as a chair of the Government Relations Committee. EDAM is a statewide association of over 410 members in the public and private sectors, rural and urban, from all corners of the state. First and foremost, we are very grateful to this committee for all of the work you've done to ensure a strong recovery for our state's economy and for all of your support over the years for our members and for our organizations. Thank you so much. The purpose of my remarks today is solely regarding the Redevelopment Grant Program. Funding for the Redevelopment Grant Program is the highest single program priority identified by EDAM members. We are absolutely grateful for the funding for MIF and JCF and for the transfer authority for deed to move dollars from MIF to redevelopment, but we are saddened that redevelopment did not receive its own dedicated funding in the bill, and we respectfully ask for your reconsideration. The demand for this program statewide greatly exceeds supply, and this program delivers powerful value and impact in communities of all sizes in both rural and urban areas. As we all know, redevelopment projects greatly increase the tax base, create and retain jobs for all Minnesotans. They diversify and strengthen local economies, transform our main streets, maximize amazing private investment, and accomplish the goals that are especially needed in the years of a post-pandemic recovery. As you heard from us before, this program has historically helped create or retain over 28,000 jobs, added over 6,000 housing units, and the $71 million awarded to date have leveraged over $3 billion in private investment and increased the tax basis by over $48 million. Stable, consistent, and reliable funding for the Redevelopment Grant Program will deliver the highest impact, highest return on investment, and most effectiveness for our communities. Having consistent and predictable funding will allow all communities to better plan and to do all of their due diligence and planning work that's critical for these projects to be a success. Redevelopment projects are complex, they're multifaceted, and they require a lot of time and planning for success. Again, on behalf of our 400 plus members statewide throughout the economic development ecosystem, thank you for your leadership and work to help grow our economy in the post-pandemic climate, and we respectively ask that the Redevelopment Grant Program receives its own stable base funding in the budget. Stable and dedicated funding will deliver the highest ROI and equip all of our businesses, developers, and communities for success. Please reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next person is Ms. Fraser. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Beth Fraser, and I'm the state manager for Main Street Alliance of Minnesota, which is an organization of small business owners from across the state of all colors who have joined together to impact public policy that invests in our communities, our employees, and small businesses. I want to comment on two pieces of the bill, one that's missing and one that we're glad is included. We're disappointed that the analysis of small business programs required by 1784 House File is not included. As was exemplified by the testimony provided by Cecia Berries, Mary Terrace, and Danny Schwartzman, the current public programs to provide access to capital and consulting to small businesses are hit and miss, and too often miss white women and BIPOC small business owners. Small businesses let us out of the last recession, and we need them to do the same this time. It's time to do an assessment of the programs we have, what works, what doesn't, and what else is being done around the country that has promise. We think it's important that small business owners themselves are consulted as the questions are developed and the recommendations are finalized to be sure that those with real-world experience are guiding the work. We hope that you will add this piece to the bill. Main Street Alliance small business owners and the rest of the Paid Family Medical Leave Coalition are excited that the bill establishes a paid family medical leave program for the state. Please see the letter from the coalition in your packet. The pandemic has shown a light on what has always been true. Workers and small business owners desperately need access to paid leave to take care of themselves and their families. For small business owners, a single accident or medical emergency could jeopardize the very existence of their business. Everyone wants workers to stay home when they are sick or may have been exposed to an illness. New parents need time to bond with their children, and adult children need to care for ailing parents. As the daughter of a man with advanced dementia, I know this firsthand. Having a state program that provides access to paid leave for small businesses would be a boon. Washington State has shown that a program can be financially sound with premiums that are ridiculously affordable for both workers and small business owners, about the cost of a cup of coffee per week, and are a cost that small businesses can budget for instead of forcing employees to take unpaid leave or delaying other payments to help themselves and their staff make it through. Not having this makes it harder for small businesses to hire and retain employees, hurts small business owners, employees, families, and the bottom line by making families go without pay. A paid family medical leave program would provide a critical safety net to families, particularly BIPOC families who are less likely to have access to leave. It would provide a safety net to small businesses and the owners of these businesses, which would have an outsized impact in Greater Minnesota, as small businesses provide the majority of jobs in Greater Minnesota. It would also provide a safety net to family child care providers, an industry that has been shrinking, in part because of the lack of benefits and safety net. Paid family medical leave is good for families, good for workers, and good for small businesses. Thank you for including it in your bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person is Ms. Ruff. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. You're muted, Ms. Ruff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Kara Ruff, the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles and the Legislative Liaison for the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living. We know that COVID initiatives needed to take priority this year. We also know that you had very complex decisions to make. However, I would be remiss if I were not here to say that we're deeply saddened that we did not receive any increase in funding at all. I appreciate this opportunity to simply ask for consideration and mercy should any funding become available for Centers for Independent Living. Centers for Independent Living provide services to people of all disabilities and all ages across the entire state of Minnesota. During this tragic year and tragic times, we have remained on the front lines, serving people and ensuring that their needs are met and that they can remain living independently. Not only do we make it possible for thousands of people to live independently, but we provide an unmatched return on investment by saving the state of Minnesota millions of dollars by keeping people out of higher priced institutions and nursing homes against their will. We have not had an increase in many, many years, yet all of our costs continue to increase substantially. And I need to make sure that the committee understands that by not providing adequate funding to Centers for Independent Living, we're inadvertently choosing to rob people with disabilities of dignity and choice, the ability to live independently, and we are choosing to dramatically increase our costs for nursing homes and higher cost institutions because we're not putting the money in up front to keep people living independently. It's a dire situation. People with disabilities have been affected dramatically during this time. And throughout, no matter what department we seem to be working with, people with disabilities still seem to be an afterthought. And in 2021, that is a tragic statement that I'm almost ashamed to admit as a 31-year advocate for people with disabilities in our state. These are dire times, they're desperate times, and everybody has good reasons, but we have been in line waiting for so long. And even if you couldn't fill our original request of host file 264, we ask that you consider any increase at all that would help us move forward even just a little bit. We ask for your desperate attention and assistance and consideration as you move forward. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person is Mr. Scott McMahon. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. And I appreciate the opportunity to comment in support of your committee's bill. There are many things I can comment about this bill, but I want to limit it to a few things that are specific to Greater Minnesota. First off and foremost, I want to thank you for the investments included here on the child care initiatives. This, as you know, is the biggest economic barrier that we face in Greater Minnesota. And these the investments included in the D grants and the Initiative Foundation grants will allow us to provide the wraparound services that our providers need to build out their businesses that can help us then build out our workforce and our economic development opportunities throughout Greater Minnesota. In addition to that, these investments will be critical to take advantage and leverage the investments that are coming out of Chairman Pinto's division regarding further childcare investments in that arena. So thank you for that. Secondly, thank you for including the base appropriation for the BDPI program, the Business Development Public Infrastructure. We're glad to see that. We were a bit disappointed that the policy language wasn't included with that one, but we hope that that's something we can work with you as conversations proceed in the coming weeks with the Senate in negotiations. We also appreciate the investment from the governor's recommendation regarding the job training investment program, the automation program. Although this is a small program, it is a very mighty program. These dollars allow businesses to quickly retool their workforce so that they can take advantage of business opportunities that come forward. So thank you for that. And then finally, the investment in the COVID small business grants that are in this bill are absolutely critical this time. Our businesses are still in a difficult position as we move through the recovery from COVID. And this investment will allow us to hopefully maintain those businesses as we move forward. One concern that we do have with that we just like to raise at this point is the language included in lines 39.21 regarding businesses owned by a resident of the state of Minnesota. A lot of times businesses in Greater Minnesota are owned by families in which one person will live in the community and one person may live across the border. And as we saw in grants earlier in the pandemic, often those businesses were precluded from getting the support from those programs, even though the business and the workers are all located in Minnesota. And so we hope that the committee may consider opportunities to address that language so that we can make sure the Minnesota businesses and the Minnesota employees are getting the resources they need. So with that, thank you for the strategic investments in this bill, and we look forward to working with you and your Senate counterparts as session continues.
Thank you so much, for your testimony. And with that, I don't see any other person. Travis, I don't know if we have any other individual who signed up to testify.
So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, we have a few who requested to come back on Friday because their schedule didn't work for today, but that should conclude for today.
Thank you so much. Members, this gives you an opportunity if you've got any questions or anything to clarify. And as you're aware of, the deadline for the amendments, noon tomorrow, I believe. So if you're planning to do an amendment, noon is the deadline. We are going to be meeting at 8:30 in the morning on Friday to finalize our bill. Mr. Reese, any other logistical? Okay, thank you. Any questions from members?
So,
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I have a couple questions for the commissioner pertaining to the bill, but I wonder if it would be better if I bring those up on Friday. I may be bringing amendments forward, and I guess I'm looking for your direction, Mr. Chairman. Should I ask specific questions on the bill now, or should I wait for Friday?
I think you can ask questions that you have, because this is the time that we have, and we can continue with the conversation on Friday if we cannot get into all the questions or anything. If you need anything clarifying, please go ahead and ask.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And all right, I'll try to condense it down. I have 9 questions, but I'm going to condense it down to a few specifically for the commissioner. Commissioner, one is a question that I have on lines 20.16, and I'm not disputing the need for these monies. It goes for wastewater infrastructure, and I'm not disputing the need. We took the testimony, we heard it. What I have a question on is, Commissioner, do you and subsequently the department support using these funds for wastewater infrastructure? And the reason I bring that up is I know that there in the past, we as legislators have been seeking additional funds for wastewater infrastructure. And when the proposal is brought forth to try to secure legacy funds and clean water funds, it was met with a lot of resistance. And so could this be another avenue for legislators to pursue for other wastewater infrastructure projects? And would that be supported, Commissioner, by yourself and the department?
So we have a Deputy Commissioner who can respond to your question. Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, if you can respond to the question in regards to the Met Council grant for the Rosemount.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Minority Lead Hamilton, this project, if you recall, was a carve out from a number of years ago for a project in Rosemount for a specific company that was doing some work related to the wastewater treatment. Ultimately, that same work that this company was doing was to benefit others in the industrial park and the lines that are being created. Generally, MIF funds are appropriated for businesses that have capital investments that they're making. This would be a specific qualified use for those projects, provided there was a business with jobs and everything else that goes along with it. This is not one of those projects. However, it is a obviously an eligible use within MIF. It's just not tied to one business expansion, but rather a much larger expansion. So is this something that MIF could be ultimately used for? Yes, provided it meets other criteria. So the legislature would have to give us authority, much like this bill is requesting, to use monies in this way. And so I guess that's the answer there, is we cannot do this without some type of legislative approval. And longer term, that would be a decision, obviously, of the legislature. And from our perspective, we'd ultimately want to keep it with job creation and facilitating expansions. But this money was appropriated 5 years ago, I believe, and using it for this purpose would benefit ultimately other businesses.
Lynn Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that explanation, Commissioner. And like I said, I'm not disputing the project itself. We heard the testimony. My concern is if we open this up, these funds for wastewater infrastructure projects, I've seen the debate on the House floor, like I said, when it came to legacy funds, clean water funds, and others, to reallocate those resources towards specific wastewater projects. And I'm concerned that this will open up, the Pandora's box, if you will, where if we set the precedence, then legislators will then turn towards this account and subsequently deed to start funding more wastewater infrastructure projects. And I'm not sold on whether or not deed wants to actually get in the business of wastewater infrastructure. And so that's why I raised the question. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Mr. Chairman. Otherwise, I can go to my next question.
Deputy Commissioner McKenna, I don't know if you wanted to comment. From my perspective, I think if you look at the language that is in there, we initially allocated that funding for programs similar to that. And changes that we see is based on the conversation that we've had in this committee. So we feel this is necessary and we can support it as is right now, as you've heard from Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, that this is something that is allowable and can be done with the direction that we're giving them to do. So we can have more discussions and we can revisit this issue before Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made my point, I'll move on. Mr. Chairman, my next question, I need some additional help from the department. It's on lines 51.13 through 51.24, and those are the funding, the reallocations of funds. And I brought this question up to the commissioner early on, because the way I interpret it is that, or my concern is about the dislocated worker program. And when I review this and do a deeper dive, I think monies that are being allocated out to various, whether it's industry councils or nonprofits or whomever that's doing the work when it's associated with dislocated workers, et cetera, I think those monies are being well invested and it's having a solid, profound impact. The way I read this language is that it looks to me like there's a $7 million cut and or a 35% reduction in the funding for that area, including the dislocated worker program. And so I'm raising that concern again. And I don't know if the commissioners would like to address that, but I may have an amendment to address it.
Thank you, Lead Hamilton. If I may, because I've been involved in taking a deep dive into the Workforce Development Fund. Quite frankly, for the past few years, if you look at the reserve in the account, I know I've had this conversation with many of the organizations that provide dislocated worker services. This is different than the federal WIOA, which is the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act Dislocated Worker Program. This is a unique program for the state of Minnesota. And there's also the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act funding for adults, and there's also a program for the youth. So I don't want to commingle the two, but speaking for this program, and I think Ms. Bickel can help me, if she can give us the background of how much is always in that account, we haven't utilized the entire amount because of the other fundings that are available for that specific purposes. So I think people need to be able to understand. We need to understand how much is in that account and how to be able to justify the amount that we're going to be putting into the dislocated worker program. In fact, if you read the language, we're saying if there's additional funding left, we want to put it back into the competitive fund because of that very reason, so that we don't have funding just sitting there without utilizing for that purpose. So Deputy Commissioner Werfa.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Noor, members of the committee, Representative Hamilton. My name is Hamza Werfa. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development. And in addition to what Chair Noor said, I just want to assure you that the Dislocated Worker Program is one that we significantly know its impact. We have, in fact, proposed in this bill to expand eligibility of the program so that more people can benefit from it. So there is no intention on our part to cut the program. We are expanding eligibility. We want to make sure that the program serves diverse populations within our state. And what you will see is the proposal is to change the amount of funding to make the funding flexible so that we don't have a funding that's just sitting on our reserves, but we can use, meet the needs of dislocated worker program. And if there's any funding left over, we can use for other workforce training programs, which all organizations can apply to. So I just want to state here and reaffirm that, you know, we are a big fan of the program. We see its value and its impact. We're very fortunate to be the only state in the country that has a state dislocated worker program. And so that's the position of the agency.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Nate Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner Werfa. I appreciate that explanation. I also understand that, you know, former representatives, Chair Mahoney and Chair Gunther, they, if memory serves me correctly, they always wanted to protect this dislocated worker program. They saw the value in that too. And so I just want to reiterate, and again, I'll do my due diligence between now and Friday to better understand that. I made my point on that. Mr. Chairman, can I go to the next one?
As you go to the next one, I just wanted to make sure the assurance. This is the way that we set it up. We're creating more opportunity. It's too competitive process. Any entity that is doing a good job should be able to apply for these resources to serve the purpose of eliminating employment barriers and to help those who really need the most. And the process we've been doing before, and in fact, everybody should be aware of this, we are now even deeping into the Workforce Development Fund to do business development. So we're even walking away further every single time into deeping into the Workforce Development Fund for other uses. So I think the way that it's designed right now will actually meet the purpose of the program, and we will have an impactful outcome for all Minnesotans who are struggling to find employment. You can proceed there, Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be, I want everybody to know that I'm very, very sensitive on this next one. So I'm going to start with that and say that I fully understand the goal that that we're wanting to achieve here. However, I want to read specifically what the language states and then make my point. On lines 69.26, and then subsequently 69.28 and 69.29. And I'm just going to read. It goes on to say, and here's the point that I want to bring to everybody's attention and the point I want to make. It says that a lesser priority shall be given if the applicant is, and it goes on to say, a woman or a veteran. A lesser priority shall be given if the entrepreneur is a woman or is a veteran. And this is under the launch program. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, you stated in your opening comments that in addition to the BIPOC community, that the women entrepreneurs, et cetera, are a priority. Now here's my concern. Once again, I understand what we're trying to achieve and we must achieve to supporting the BIPOC entrepreneurs, et cetera. What I'm concerned with, and this comes back to budget targets and stuff, what I'm concerned with is that we are Talon in this case to try to achieve what we're wanting to achieve with the BIPOC community. We're telling veterans that they are of lesser priority. We're telling women and the disabled that they are lesser priority. And it even states that Greater Minnesota is a lesser priority. Mr. Chairman, I don't have an amendment for this. I'm simply making a comment. What I would like to see, we have additional dollars in the state's coffers now. What I would like to see is not pit our veterans, if you will, against one another, the BIPOC community, the women, the disabled, you know, et cetera. What I would like to see is additional fundings and resources to go in to where we can actually fund the BIPOC community and still prioritize, you know, the disabled, the veterans, the women entrepreneurs, et cetera. But if you simply read that, to me, it's problematic. And so, again, I don't have an amendment, and I won't have an amendment for it. But I would ask Mr. Chairman, yourself and others, if we can work together so that we're not pitting one against the other, if you will. So I made my point on that. Mr. Chairman.
I appreciate it. I think we may need that clarification from the department. This was the DE amendment to the bill that we originally had. So
yes,
if someone from the department, from DEED, will be able to, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, the answer to that question is this was not in our language, I don't believe. This was a bill, I believe, that was heard in your committee earlier in the session. So this was not, this is not our language.
All right, thank you so much. Lead Hamilton, we will make sure that we address your concerns and get more clarification on that. So thank you so much. Please proceed.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman, and thank you for your generosity and time. I have one more question, that the rest I'll wait for Friday. But my last one is on lines 38.20. It's the COVID grant program. And that's $50 million, and it's a 50-50 split for the 7-county metro area and for the 80-county greater Minnesota. Of that, it goes on to state in lines 39.12 of the DE amendment and 39.14 and beyond, that of that $50 million, $10 million will go towards businesses with 6 employees or less, $10 million will go towards minority businesses, and $3 million will go to businesses who rent to other minority businesses. And for that one, I've got a dear friend who owns Hmongtown Marketplace on Como. And so that's the example that I'm using for that $3 million, that type, okay? So I understand that. My question is, out of that $50 million, the $10 million for 6 or under employees, the $10 million for minority business, and the $3 million, what portion of that 50-50 split do those dollars come from? I mean, is it an equal portion to where, let's go with the small employees, so $5 million will come out of the metro share and $5 million will come out of greater Minnesota share? Or how is DEED supposed to administer that request of that line item to $23 million?
Lead Hamilton, this is a good question. In fact, we did this similar program, and Deputy Commissioner McKinnon will explain a little bit further. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. It is all one big bucket, essentially, is how we viewed this in the previous iteration of this. And so ultimately what happens is we have a minimum number of businesses that need to be served. And if the metro serves, just as an example, 80% of those, that's okay. We just make sure that 50% of the money is going either way. Similarly, with the cultural mall piece that you had brought up, there were more cultural malls that were funded in the metro last program. So that meant we had to do more businesses in greater Minnesota. And so that's how that works.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I want to be respectful to you and the other committee members, so I'm going to save my other questions or comments for Friday, unless we have time today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Other member questions or clarifying? Since I don't see anyone raising their hand, I just wanted to get that clarity. I know, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, we do have funding for MIF, and the adjustment that we're making, it's because we still have some additional resources. And the way it's, things are set up, you have the authority to transfer money into the redevelopment fund. Can you help us understand the dynamics, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chair. At this time, yes, are carrying some balances in the MIF and JCF program. And part of that, as the bill also recognizes, is that obviously some contracts had to be canceled over the past year or two, which has increased the amounts that we're carrying forward. The answer as it relates to the redevelopment program, we've had this authority for, I think, a couple of years now and have made transfers to the redevelopment program through the MIF appropriation. We are very close to announcing about $3 million in redevelopment grants that is a result of the transfer. Earlier in the year, and last year, I think it was, we provided $4 million for that program. It's a little early yet whether we'll be able to transfer or how much money we'll be able to transfer, but we do plan on a transfer in August as well.
Thank you so much for that clarity, and I hope members can understand where we're coming from and the purposes of making sure that we can utilize the funding that is already available. With that, I also wanted to emphasize, we need to be able to provide the resources for the workforce development to make sure that we meet the goals of helping all those who are looking for employment. We understand the impact of COVID-19, and we have taken a position that we will be avoiding any direct appropriation. In fact, this opens up a huge opportunity for organizations or even institutions that provide workforce development. This is a major shift. This is an important shift. This is needed shift. So as we go forward, I wanted to affirm that we will be avoiding any direct appropriation from the Workforce Development Fund. If we get other general fund, absolutely. If we get other funds, yes. But at this point, I think we need to affirm and we need to be more committed to ensuring that we address the purpose of the fund and avoid anything that may come in. So with that, I think I will move that House File 1342 be laid over, and we will get back to it on Friday. So thank you so much, and we're now adjourned.